So grids. Okay, so you can see that up there. First of all, my name's Coy. I am the design director at nytimes.com. I also run a blog called subtraction.com where I write a lot about design and software and my dog and stuff like that. And this is Mark.
Hi, I'm Mark Bolton. I worked at the BBC for 4 years before leaving and forming my own really small design consultancy with just me. I write a blog as well about design, mostly grumpy posts at the moment. I don't know why that is. So that's me.
Okay, so just to start off this whole thing about grids, I want to introduce this concept about how dots turn into design, about how marks become actual human intention. So if you put a dot on a page, it's just a dot, right? It's just a random dot. The second you add an additional dot on the page, what you've actually got is a design, because human beings want to actually infer some intention into any two marks on the plane. They want to start reading into that and seeing some sort of order there. So with these two dots, you can just start inferring a grid straight away. So you could say these are two points that reside within the gutter of this this multi-column grid. You can divide it up horizontally and create a perfect matrix. And this all of a sudden satisfies the human desire to see some sort of order there. Graphic design is all about this desire to set order to things, to bring order to information. And the grid is really one of the most vivid manifestations of that will to order that we have in our toolbox. And so having established that, I think we're going to talk a bit about the history.
That will to order, to find order in things, has been around for hundreds of years, going right the way back to Leonardo da Vinci and Le Corbusier and up to the modern day. Around the turn of the century, graphic design was very much about ornamentation and came from a background of fine art. And that goes right the way back to the Impressionists and Manet. Then something happened, and that was modernism. And now this is incredible to think that there's just 14 years difference between this and that. Just 14 years. And modernism wanted to rationalize. The whole thing was to rationalize design. And it was out with decoration and in with logic and standardization. Here's this slide. Here's Tish Holden, the new typography. And this is just, these are guidelines for designing a letterhead, amazingly. So the modernists were looking to build a new aesthetic. And that aesthetic was derived from the machine, and it was championing standardization. Now, does that sound familiar? There is a very strong overlap between what they were doing then and what we're doing now. So this came through till the 1970s. We got Paul Rand here. With the annual report for IBM in 1975. And then to Joseph Muller Brockman, who many consider to be the god of grid design. He really embraced the limitations of the printing press at the time. The inks that were around, the letterpress type that was around at the time. He produced an amazing set of designs. I mean, these here, it's incredible to think that these were, from 50 years ago. We've got Massimo Vignelli with the National Park Service here, designed a uni-grid solution. And really, these help designers create an incredible sense of brand across a multitude of publications. So we go to grids on the web. Now, where are we with grids on the web? So first of all, we've got a couple of examples here. We've got Crate and Barrel, a couple of retail stores here. It's interesting to note that retail stores generally do a pretty good, they give it a good go with grids. But quite often, they unfortunately don't fall in line with web standards. There are a lot of horrible embedded tables and things like that. But the grids works well across a multitude of pages. The previous slide was four columns, this is five, and it takes it through to text forms. One which has been recently kind of in the press is Comment is Free, for The Guardian. A great example of a three-column grid, which is they aren't uniform, I tried to break this down to work out how many columns, how many units this grid was comprised of, and I could not work it out. I think it's in the region of 19 unit grid, something like that. But with a grid with that flexibility, it creates so many different varieties of page structure, and they all fit together because they're built upon an underlying grid. So let's get on and build a grid.
Let's build a grid. What should we build? Well, let's not build Yahoo, but let's build something a lot like Yahoo. Because I think, you know, when we took a look at the challenges that we wanted to try and address in order to illustrate the basic principles about building a grid, Yahoo is a really great example. There's a lot of very common elements to a lot of different kinds of web pages, lots of different kinds of information challenges. It's a you know, rudimentary but basically unimaginative use of the grid. No offense to anybody from Yahoo here today. And actually, to avoid getting in any more trouble, we're just going to call it something completely different. So any similarities, blah, 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 purely coincidental. So the first part of any design solution is requirements. And I've heard it said a few times, even today, the idea that constraints, requirements are really such an important part of creating the opportunity to be inventive. We're just going to establish two very simple requirements straight away: the 1024 by 768 screen size, the big ad unit. Talk about the screen size first. Everybody knows that it's not truly 1024 by 768 when you put a browser in there and you have the browser at its natural size and you add all the Chrome from the browser. You've got basically 960 pixels across and 600 to 700 pixels vertically. The second requirement, the big ad, is actually, out of all the insanity that comes out of the Internet Advertising Bureau, this is one that kind of makes sense. It's kind of somebody was not smoking weed when they came up with this ad size. That's because if you use that 336 pixel width for a big ad unit, you can actually fit in several other ad unit sizes here, as shown here. So again, constraints, really the mother of design invention. If you have a fixed requirement, something that you can't arbitrarily change, it's really going to sort of push you to do a lot more inventive stuff, stuff that you wouldn't have anticipated to begin with. Talk about some of the basic concepts, building blocks.
So we start off, any grid design is comprised of units. Units are the building blocks of grid design. They stack up to create columns. And these columns, in between these columns are gutters. The horizontal lines are, well, I call them hanging lines. I'm sure there's other terminology for them as well. So in general, we want to create units and multiples of 3 or 4. 12 is ideal because we can have 3 columns of 4. We can have 2 columns of 6. We can have 4 columns of 3. And we can, of course, have 6 columns of 2. So the extrapolation of how do you define the size of the unit? How do you get to that point? Well, Coy mentioned the constraints. And with a little bit of math, he's going to now explain how we get to that unit from the constraints that we've got to work out the widths of the columns.
Okay, so back to that big ad. The first thing to realize is you can't fit 3 of these 336 pixel big ads within our 960 pixel canvas. And you could use a secret magic formula to calculate how wide your unit should be. This is kind of what, you know, I do. It's probably not worth even writing down because it's so complicated. For me, it's more of a process of trial and error. And I'm going to take you through a couple of trial runs right now to develop the unit size and the grids. So the first thing you could do is just create a column out of that ad unit, maybe divide it up into 2, and then see how many of these you can extrapolate across the page. In this case, you come up with 5 columns or 5 units there, which isn't that helpful. You could divide it up further into 10 units, but it's not that helpful because it's only 865 pixels wide. So you're leaving almost 100 pixels of canvas that you're not using. So another try. You could divide it up into three with column with gutters between of 10 pixels each and extrapolate it out across the page to yield eight. And you could divide each of those eight into two to come up with 16 units. And actually, this is a pretty good grid. You could kind of run with this because 12 and 16 are actually fairly useful. You can divide up that left side there into two equal units. You could divide the right side up into two smaller units and sort of create a little bit of variety in the page. And then you can combine two of the units all the way in the far left to create a navigation. And this is where you know, we decided to actually chuck this grid because those two units combined together aren't quite wide enough for the kind of navigation that you would want to create for this Yahoo.com redesign. So third time's the charm. Take the same column for the advertisement here. Divide it up this time into five units. Extrapolate that across the page. You have 14 units. That's kind of a strange number because it's not easily divisible, but it's actually a fairly good number to use for these purposes because it'll show you how an odd number can sometimes make things a little bit more interesting. So if you take up the five units from the ad column on the right, you've got nine units left over. You can divide those into three columns of three if you need to. Again, combine two of them into a left navigation column. And this is actually wider than what we saw before, so it's going to be a little bit more useful. So now, basically, the grid is done, and we can start designing and start laying things out, putting the header on, and so forth. Mark, why don't you design it for us?
Yeah, I'll do my best. So we're going to start off with the header. We've got our nice logo here up in the top left-hand corner. And we want to use the balanced area over on the right there for a search region. Again, aligning to the grid units there. And the CSS box model actually works really, really well within this design. I'll just break this down. We've got three items there, tacos, chicken parmesan, and hot pockets. At the moment, those are aligning within our columns to the edge of the unit. Now, that's okay, because we can put rules to divide the columns up. But the problem is that looks a little bit too tight. Now, if we put in a reversed out bit of type in there, we've got a problem with alignment if that reversed out type, say we've got, if that's a rollover or something. So we need to give those items above a little more room. We need to shift them over a little bit. And then that works just fine now with a rollover. So it works really, really well, this building the grid like this with the CSS box model you're all familiar with, I'm sure. We've got the padding, the margin, and this is the way this builds up. So if we just go back to the previous slide, margin, border, padding, and then if we overlay that over the grid structure there, we've got the column and the grid line in the middle of the gutter. You can see how we can begin to build out the grid from the direct relationship between the box model and the columns. So back to the search. We're just going to quickly run through this. We haven't got much time at all. We're good? Okay. We're just going to keep building this up. We're adding in the items for the search. Local search options there. We're, again, aligning those to the navigation. Picking out the navigation with a thick rule above and reversing that out on a rollover state. Again, aligning with the grid. You know, consistency with the alignment to the grid is absolutely key. You know, as soon as you start misaligning, consistently misaligning, then you're going to start running into problems. So, Coy, do you want to take us through?
Sure.
Framing.
So, let's see. So we got that left-hand navigation column. You can just flow in those nav items there right down the left side. And then we want to sort of create these little visual groups with rules because we have some sub-nav items on the left. And I want to break out now and take a closer look at how we place those rules, sort of extending upon that box model that Mark was talking about just a moment ago. And for this, I'd like to refer back to the principles that some of you might have learned about framing a picture, where the eye actually visually drops elements in a frame, so that a lot of framers, or most all framers, will actually add a little bit more padding at the bottom of the frame, bottom of the mat, than the top and the left and the right. And this is what we want to do in our CSS, or you know, in Photoshop while you're laying things out as well, is to add just a little bit more space at the bottom there, so that the eye will see visually equal sides all the way around. You put the rules above and below again on the border lines, and so what you get there is a visual equality all the way around, and the effect actually works much better when you start stacking things. When you look at just one item, you might be able to notice that there's a little bit more space down below, but when you start stacking them, the space looks a lot more equal, and that extra padding becomes less discernible. Closer look at the navigation here. It's blown up, but most of the times when you look at it on the page, you won't even notice it. So with the navigation in place now, you can start putting in some widgets. Going back to the Yahoo page, they had this area on the right that had six little widgets that when you rolled over one, they would expand. It's a little bit of Ajax. I think what we decided to do was actually see if we could distribute them in a different way. So with that navigation in place, we will carve out a little area on the right for some of the widgets, but then use a little area across the top, too, for a kind of a toolbar. And we can dress up the layer with a little bit of color, and it's probably hard to see there, but some grid lines as well. You'll notice towards the far right, we've actually got two extra units, which creates a little bit of asymmetry, but that's not so bad. Put in the labels, the text labels here for things like mail and the messenger notification and so forth. And we're going to leave the far right to the weather. And then throw in some icons, and it's a little commercial message for Icon Buffet, who are really nice in letting us have these icons for this comp. And then in that far right area, we had those extra units. We just create a wider area for the weather and show three little weather icons. And that's an example of, again, the 14-unit grid is a little weird, but then we were able to find kind of a nice way to use those extra units on the right side. Throw the remaining widgets down in that area on the right. And for these purposes, we just use a more straightforward approach, sort of like with disclosure arrows, where you could expand and collapse those other widgets. So that's what we've got so far. And then we can add grid lines. I'm not sure that you can see it from there, but between each of the major columns in the gutter, we just add a single pixel line to demarcate the areas a little bit more clearly. Features area.
Okay, so right in the center there, we haven't got much time, so I'm going to really whiz through this. We've got the features area in the center, which is the number of units there, and we want to put in a kind of tab things. The tabs are off the grid. I don't think that's too much of a bother, really. Let them just be tabs. And then we work on the lead story there. Again, consolidate the three units into a 200 pixel width. And then one thing here that we want to do is that at the moment it's quite flat. The tabs in there haven't got much, pop to them. So we're going to do, once we add in the images here, which we just pop it up. We break the grid. And this gives the page more depth, gives it more interest, and really pops that up to the front for the user. And then that's the completed features area. Again, we're going to work down the page now, flowing the headlines of a list. Again, some more tabs. We want to keep the length, the measure of those lists, fairly restrained. So over on the right-hand side, we put in our market data in there. And then we want a subtle background in there just to pop it out a little more. And a similar approach for the markets area down at the bottom. There's four underlying columns, but, sometimes it's not necessary to stick too close to the grid. Okay, do you want to go through most popular?
So, one of the widgets that they had on the Yahoo homepage was just a simple list of most popular search items. And we actually have that on the New York Times site as well. So we played with it a little bit to see if we could come up with something different from lists. And we also thought that we could anchor the bottom of the page as opposed to creating another module in the far right column that was just a list. We might span the bottom and create a horizontal alignment for that most popular section and show the top five most popular searches. And this way, each of these items, again, they combine units into little columns, and they can serve as these big target areas. So once you get to the bottom, there's a lot of visual attractiveness to parse out that area. And so basically, the layout is done at this point. You know, add a couple other things in the footer and so forth, big ad for Icon Buffet, always necessary. So that's one solution with the grid. And we went to a little bit further trouble to see how we might use that exact same 14-unit grid structure to develop a sibling site. And we worked on personals, which is, you know, aside from Yahoo.com, probably the most crucial of their properties. So in this case, we're just using that same 14-pixel grid. We're playing with the area at the top a little bit, using a toolbar in a similar way as we did before. We got rid of the icons, so that it makes sense in this case. Mixed up the way we're inserting the links for the homepage and made the search a little bit more narrow and so forth. And try to be a lot more playful with combining the units into different columns. Here you can see that same 14-unit grid and the way that we combine them together. Not quite as uniform as before. Just to illustrate that you can stick close to the grid. You can actually make the grid a strong part of the aesthetic of the page, but you don't have to be slavish about using the same combinations of units and columns over and over again. So across the middle there, you've got... the first column is about 6 units. The second column is about 5 units. The last one is about 2 or 3 units. And then across the second tier, it's a little bit more uniform. It's a more straightforward look at how we set up the columns. And I have 2230, and then this next slide says end. So anybody
three
has...
3 minutes for questions.
Yeah, quick questions. You, sir. The question is, how did we decide to apportion the horizontal grid lines? Mark actually uses math to do this, and I just use whatever.
Well, the horizontal lines, I mean, the units, the size of the unit, the height of the unit, the way I design grids is I use ratios for that. And those ratios can be rational or irrational. So they can be either 3 to 2, 1 to 1.618, if you want to go with the golden mean. And then those that ratio then can be carried forward as you expand the unit horizontally. There's a relationship between any horizontal that you draw is always going to take it back to that proportion. The proportion is retained. So in that sense, I mean, a lot of times the horizontal rules are dictated by the content, you know, more often than not.
I just eyeball it. Yes. Vertical grids. I think that's kind of what you were just talking about, right?
Yeah, I think that was kind of it.
So I just eyeball it.
I think the important thing. Okay, so the question is, how do you enforce vertical space? I mean, you're talking with scalable text and that kind of thing, right? Well, within this design, we've got some very clear hanging lines, right? Where there's a, you know, you zone off the design, and then from that point on, everything hangs. And then you zone it off again, and everything hangs. I mean, I think it's unrealistic to enforce too many of those because of the nature of the content. I mean, this is exactly it. You have to kind of look at the content and see how that's going to fit. That's the way I use it. I have a number of hanging lines, And that helps with white space and that kind of thing. Does that answer the question?
Okay. That's all we got. You can see these at yeah.subtraction.com. That's 1 Y, 2 E's, 2 A's, and 2 H's. I don't know why I did it that way. So, thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.